Hello, I'm Eddie Merckx. Welcome to the VeloCast.
And welcome once again to another edition of the VeloCast. My name is Scott.
And I'm John.
Well, coming up on this week's show, Alessandro Pataki says niente, fingering Lance Armstrong, London gets a cycle hire scheme, nipples are apparently illegal, and glow-in-the-dark rims. But first, Bjarne Riis has revealed that despite ongoing rumours to the contrary, Saxo Bank will continue to sponsor his cycling team in 2011, along with new sponsor SunGard. Now, joining the team for the next 2 years is recent Tour de France winner Alberto Contador.
Sorry, I know it's juvenile. I can't believe you got finger, nipple and ring in the same intro.
Hey, that's the kind of thing that gets me up in the morning. Actually, I better rephrase that. That sounds even worse.
Anyway, moving on to cycling. In a classic thing that's become now a bit of a tradition in the VeloCast, we completely screwed up the prediction about what was happening with Bjarne Riis, where we said he seemed to be getting sidelined, because he's come across with a... You know, the goose that lays the golden egg now by getting burnt. And Saxo Bank have stayed with them. And, you know, he's got an embarrassment of sponsors, because Saxo apparently weren't the saviour sponsor he had in the corner. They've pulled back for a wee while to give Saxo a chance to get back on board. So, with the teamwork, the best Grand Tour rider in the world, Fabian Cancellara, and Riis's, you know, I'd hesitate to call it genius, but his awesome talent as a DS... Who's going to bet against Bert next year? Seriously.
Well, I don't think, you know, it'd be a very, very brave man to bet against Alberto Contador, regardless of what team he's on. But I think that's really the central question you alluded to there was it Contador's imminent arrival that kept Saxo Bank in the frame? Because to all intents and purposes, it kind of looked like they had gone, that they didn't want to sponsor a cycling team anymore. And we worried, as you said, John, that Riis himself was going to be out on his ear because he couldn't find a new sponsor in time.
I think looking at I think it was Saxo's CEO or one of the two of them who said, you know, we looked at how well they were doing in the Tour, and after a wee while we decided it was really good. I think that's slightly disingenuous, because, you know, he's saying they got interested again partway through the Tour. And Astana are saying, you know, it's really funny, but halfway through the Tour, Bert seemed to be really uninterested in signing with us again. So I don't think that's a coincidence. But I think the whole thing was brokered by Mike Signard at Specialized as well. Because he had a chance to bet on either Andy Schleck, who was on a Specialized, or, you know, Alberto Contador, who was on a Specialized this year. And I think he's shown who he thinks going to win the next few Grand Tours.
Yeah. Well, we'll come to Specialized just in a moment or two. Riis refused to reveal any details before the press conference, but Danish television apparently reported that Saxo Bank will put in approximately €6 million for 2011, although it's unclear whether they'll continue their support beyond next year.
But he's got a sponsor in waiting if they go, you know, because the secret sponsors are still there. €6 million sound like a lot, but I would bet Alberto's salary's eaten up a big chunk of that, so SunGard must be ponying up a fair bit as well.
Yeah, you would think so. And Riis has also said that he thinks Contador can win the Giro, the Tour and the Vuelta all in the same season, and of course that would make him the first rider to do so.
Good luck with that. I think he probably can, but it would need to be a perfect storm and an incredibly strong, in-depth team. So... if anybody can do it, Alberto can, but it would be hard.
Yeah, you see, the thing is, he's not saying that it's going to be next year. He says that he reckons it could happen in 2012. He says, "I am convinced that we have not seen his full potential yet. It's obvious that we must go after the Tour de France, but Alberto could win all three major races in a year, and I want to be part of that." So my question there, which I think you've kind of answered, was can he do it? But...
I think if anybody can, and I mean it would seal his his place in the pantheon of the greats, where they are looking quite light. I mean, they've got the likes of Cancellara is in climbing, and I was quite quite amused today that Riis was specifically not ruling out Rasmussen being part of the team in the future. And he would be a hell of a climbing domestique for Contador. I mean, remember, before he got thrown off for going on his holidays in the tour that Bert won, he was a revelation when they were going head-to-head in the mountains, however they were fueled, you know. So he's done his time. You know, he wasn't even done for doing EPO. He was just done for being in the wrong place.
Yes, for catching the wrong flight, yeah.
You know, we've seen Vino come back. We've seen Basso being embraced by... you know, by the public on his return. So maybe Rasmussen deserves a break. But this, I mean, this is a great development because we've got, we were really worried that the Schlecks and Contador were going to be in the same team. But we've now got Contador with a team manager who knows every strength and weakness of the Schlecks inside out. And we've got the two brothers going, you know, going where we don't know yet. But it bodes well for the future. And it's good to see some money coming into the sport. We've been worried about that all year.
Yeah, well, sticking with that then, as you've just alluded to as well, Frank and Andy Schleck have officially announced that they will not be riding for Bjarne Riis's Saxo Bank cycling team next season. Instead, the Everly brothers of professional cycling will ride for a Luxembourg-based team in 2011.
Well, that's not quite finalised yet. I mean, everybody assumes it, but there are rumours that they've got a backup plan in place with Johan Brunel at Radio Shack. You know, if the Luxembourg thing falls through. But I think their first choice, and everybody's, is going to be that team based in Luxembourg with, is it Brian Nygaard?
Uh-huh, yeah.
Has left Team Sky. So all the pieces seem to be falling into place that Kim Anderson's team with him as DS and its basis in Luxembourg is going to feature the Schlecks at the top of the pile.
Well, that's a really interesting thing you're saying about this potential for them to go to Radio Shack with Johan Brunel, because I would have thought that the only thing that would keep them away from Riis, because as far as we understand, there's no bad feeling or ill will or being unhappy at Saxo Bank, that they just would have preferred to be on a Luxembourg-based team for kind of national interest. Saying that they would go to Radio Shack kind of paints as somewhat of a different picture.
Well, no, I think it is just a rumour, but I think for them, their first choice is always going to be this Luxembourg team. I mean, it's clearly going to be. They're both passionate, I mean, and go on about being Luxembourgers all the time. But it's a team that isn't a team yet. You know, all the pieces seem to be falling into place, but it's not concrete. We haven't seen the funding guarantees. We haven't seen all the stuff that you need to make a Pro Tour team. So I think Radio Shack, when it's being mentioned, it's just in a kind of a parachute almost, you know, just an emergency thing that if the Luxembourg falls through, at least they've got a top tier team to ride with.
Or alternatively, it's wishful thinking on Brunel's part. You mentioned it earlier, so much for the predictions of Alberto Contador and the Schlecks on the same team.
Aye, well, I'm glad they're not. I'm genuinely glad they're
absolutely.
Not.
I mean, because you said it would have been the dullest year ever with, you know, two of the best riders in the world riding on the same team. It would just make for very, very dull racing.
Yeah. I've got to say, though, that Contador Maurice, it could still be pretty dull racing.
Well, with team leader and Tour de France winner Alberto Contador confirmed as a Saxo Bank rider for next year, Astana have started their rebuilding process by signing Robert Kieselowski from Leakygas.
I tell you, it's a sign of how strong that Leakygas team were in depth in the Giro. This is a 24-year-old Croat on that team. I didn't even notice he finished 10th in the Giro.
No, I know.
You know, I mean, that team were incredibly strong. It was the hardest Giro we've seen for years, so he's clearly a rider of talent. He's got to be a good bet for the future. So, I mean, it's a good signing. But they're clearly hurting that Bert's decided to go elsewhere. I mean, Vinokourov is saying, I only hope he didn't take the decision before the start of the tour, or, you know, presumably he'll have him kneecapped if he finds that out. And essentially refuting everything that Alberto said. You know, Alberto was saying that, you know, the Kazakhs were pushing him for a contract. And Vino's saying, actually, no, it wasn't he. It was him pushing us.
Well, yeah, so, that's what Contador has been, I beg your pardon, Vinokourov has been quoted as saying that, certainly for the early part of the tour, it was Contador himself who was pushing for an extension to his contract.
Yeah, and
clearly wasn't the case. I mean, Contador had decided to go to Reese, I think. And I think it was brokered by Specialized, which has severely pissed off Giuseppe Martinelli, the DS.
Well, yeah, he has said that he blames Specialized for what he described as Contador's desertion. The Italian declared, Specialized have invested in Contador and they can guarantee him being the face of their brand in the same way that Armstrong was the face of Nike. So I think, really, the question here is Martinelli saying that high-profile riders like Contador can be essentially more lax about their contracts since they've got professional sponsorship deals?
I tell you, the only thing that stops me talking about this in depth is I've got this terrible feeling you're going to start talking about that stupid game where people kick a ball around
the
field.
No, absolutely not.
Because every time we talk about this, you go on about transfer windows and offside rules and all that kind of shit, and I've got no idea what you're talking about. Yes, is the simple answer. The riders now have enough money from things like Specialized and Giro for, you know, glasses and helmets and whatever and shoes, with that bloody ridiculous CD adverts all the way through the tour and subsequently, that they can afford just to move and almost disregard their contract because they've got a decent living wage anyway before they get it from the team. You know, it's different from before the Greg LeMond days, where essentially they were workers down a mine, except they were riding on a bike a lot of the time. So individual sponsorship is making a difference to the way that the sport transfers happen.
Well, Astana are also being heavily linked with Rabobank's Denis Menchov, who of course took third place at the Tour, and Castapagna's David Arroyo.
Both good signings. And they've got the money. I mean, they've still got the money. They're still Vino's team, so he'll have a lot of say in who goes there. And you could do a lot worse than Menchov, who's got absolutely the worst nickname in cycling, the Silent Assassin. I mean, it sounds like somebody that farts a lot. It's just shocking. but he showed his worth at the Tour this year. He's a sensible rider, rides when he needs to, and he's a decent team leader and a proven Grand Tour winner in two Grand Tours. So it would still be a strong team, even without Bert.
The aforementioned Schleck brothers, Denis Menchov, who we also just spoke about, and Mark Cavendish have all announced their participation at this year's Vuelta a España, which kicks off on August the 28th in Sevilla.
Should be a cracking race. And I mean, the course looked really interesting again. Absolutely brutal. So I'm looking forward to it. We were talking briefly during the tour, God, it seems like an age ago now, about thinking about doing daily podcasts again for all the Grand Tours. And I think Fun Run Robbie actually summed it up really well when he said the difference between the Vuelta and the Tour is that when nothing's happening in the Tour, and we did it as well, you know, we talked about my lovely holidays in Brittany and how I'd been to Banyuls in the south of France and all that kind of stuff. France is beautiful enough that there's always something to talk about, even on a dull day that's a 100-metre sprint at the end.
I think, hang on a minute, I think the Spanish Tourist Authority will be writing you a letter very, very soon saying, and I'm paraphrasing, obviously, shut your pie hole, because, well, I mean, Spain's a beautiful country.
No, it really is, and there are bits of Spain that I love. You know, I would happily move to San Sebastian tomorrow and never leave. Simon Alderson, one of my mates, lives in Madrid now and posts great videos of, you know, particularly off-road riding in the parks, for example.
I've seen those, yeah.
And my mum and dad used to winter in the south of Spain, like migrating birds every year before my dad died. So I do like Spain, but there are bits of it where it just looks like they're riding through a bleak, barren desert, you know, in the transition stages, for example. And there are lots of Spain where there seem to be very few people. So it would be pretty dull to talk about every day. But the cycling's going to be really dramatic. I mean, again, they've come up with a cracking route. And this shows there are quality riders there. So I'm going to be glued to the telly.
Yes, well, officials apparently are still awaiting word from Tour de France winner Alberto Contador, but said last Sunday that it's unlikely he will start the season's third Grand Tour.
No, Bert said he's not going, so, you know, he's not going to go.
And other big names expected to start include Tom Boonen, Oscar Ferrer, Philip Gilbert and Filippo Pozzato.
Aye, I mean, it's going to be a good race. I love it. It's a good race every year.
Now, moving on to Tour de France green jersey winner Alessandro Petacchi, who apparently did not know he was being investigated for alleged doping practices prior to racing at the Tour de France. Now, this comes from his lawyer speaking last Tuesday.
Well, he's got a bit of form because, like, nearly all of the Peloton, he's apparently currently suffering asthmatic and was done for excessive levels of the asthma drug salbutamol before. But this time it seems a bit more serious. There's PFC, which is perfluorocarbon, which is a kind of EPO substitute.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And human serum albumin. I've no idea what that does.
It doesn't sound nice, though, does it?
There's a really stupid... Dan State, a British raider's just been banned in the UK for... in some stupid wee road race. And I'm sorry if the person who won it, it's a highlight of their career. But some stupid wee road race down in England, he had EPO and an anti-cancer drug. You know, these people are playing with their lives. And for somebody to do that for, you know, a British elite race, it's the saddest thing I've ever heard. For Pataki, the stakes are a bit higher. But to have it in your house, I mean, how dim is that?
Yes, very, allegedly. And of course, Pataki himself has opted not to respond during police questionings about...
That's always a winner. That makes you look really innocent.
Exactly. He says, he was talking to Gazzetta dello Sport and said, the accusations are too generic, so we decided not to respond to questions. There's nothing strange about doing that. It's a normal defence strategy. Now, it has to be said that defence strategies and the whole Italian legal system is as mental as it can possibly be. So it may very well be that that is the done thing, is just to say, look, I'm going to say nothing about this.
The thing, I saw a quote, I mean, I may have dreamt this because I can't find it again, but if anybody who's listening can point me to it, where Pataki essentially said, they're part of an earlier era of my career. And he, you know, he'd just forgotten to throw them out, essentially. But whatever, it doesn't look good. But the thing is, everybody, we had quite a few tweets after the tour saying, you know, he'll get his green jersey when it's taken off him if he's found guilty. Thing is, he'll keep it because he wasn't guilty at the time he won it. But if he is, I'll be really sad because his winning the green jersey was one of the highlights of the tour for me. And a tour which I've repeatedly said I think is the cleanest we've seen for years. It'd be a real shame if this kind of Indian summer in Pataki's career was a result of the hot sauce.
Yeah. He's still apparently able to race in the next few weeks because the police activities are still in the investigative stage and no formal charges have yet been made. However, Pataki had also been summoned and appeared in front of the anti-doping investigators of the Italian Olympic Committee yesterday, as we record.
Well, watch this space. I mean, we're going to see this develop quite quickly.
Sure. Now, in an open letter to Cycling News, Dr. Michele Ferrari has responded to a post written by former Tour de France winner Greg LeMond in order to clarify a few of the issues presented in his letter.
Aye, essentially, I didn't do it, and the only doping I've heard about was him anyway.
That was about the size of it. Shall we move on? I know the weather.
That is, I mean, it's smoke and mirrors, this letter. I mean, there's a lot of stuff where he was never found guilty. Go and read it and judge for yourself. I mean, I'm not going to parse the whole thing and go through it. I don't think it's added anything to Michele Ferrari's credibility in my eyes.
Well, since you've nothing else to say on that, and let's face it, who could blame you? Lance Armstrong has said that he is confident he will be cleared well before any charges are filed in a federal investigation into the old US Postal Service team, and confirmed that he has hired one of the country's best criminal defence firms to protect his rights in this matter.
Which is a sensible choice. I mean, you know, if anybody's got the legal advice they need to protect themselves properly during an investigation, it's Lance Armstrong. Actually, before we talk about this, I want to address something that happened a couple of weeks ago. I avidly read, largely because I'm a shameless narcissist, I avidly read all of the comments on iTunes about the show to see how people like it and how we're getting on and, you know, if we can change anything to improve it. And we got a really good review once, or one day, from a guy who gave us 4 stars. I mean, it was a perfectly balanced and honest review. And he said that it was a good podcast if you could get past our obsession with the UCI, to which I would say, if you're not obsessed with the UCI, you could end up with no sport because, you know, they're crucial at the foundation of the whole sport. But he also said, if you could get over the excessive Lance hating. That quite surprised me because the same day on Twitter I'd been accused of biting the Lance fanboy towel. So I wasn't quite sure how to reconcile those two things.
I don't read the comments.
You're not as needy as me.
That would appear to be the case. But I don't think that we... I certainly don't hate Armstrong. I really can't respond to that. I honestly don't... I'm fairly ambivalent about Lance Armstrong these days.
I think that's the word, ambivalent. You've got to admire what he's achieved.
However,
he's achieved it as an athlete, and he's provided some great spectacles and some great sporting events during the, you know... Even before the tour. I mean, that classic world championship where it was a skating rink and most of them ended up on their arse and he won it. But you can't be blind to
what's going on.
Just, this isn't just smoke. I mean, this is an absolute forest fire's worth of smoke that's going on in the background.
And the thing as well is that I know we spoke about this before. It comes back to saying, go through this investigation properly, and if it turns out at the end of it the guy has, you know, is completely exonerated, we'll be the first to say that's
fine.
I've
got a Lance tattoo on my shoulder.
Now, this is being recorded. Be careful what
with a towel on the other one.
If he's exonerated, then that's absolutely fine, and everybody moves on. We just want a CGU process. We just want to make sure that the guy who's won the tour 7 times did it cleanly.
Yeah. Anyway, he's employed a criminal firm.
Yeah.
Criminal firm, that's a bad one. He's employed a firm of criminal attorneys.
It sounds like Landis is getting kneecapping.
Yeah. And they're moaning about the fact that people are being offered deals if they testify. And, you know, that's really unfair. Well, if it's unfair, it's been unfair in the American legal system and the British one forever. Because people are always offered sweeteners to testify. That doesn't make them liars. You know, it's just part of the game. You know, tell us the truth. We want the big fish. We'll go a bit more lenient on you. It's how it's done. So you can't, I mean, you can moan about it, but it's clearly just posturing. They know that goes on all the time.
Well, I think where Armstrong's legal representatives are having a hard time is the fact that it's USADA that are offering these what they call sweetheart deals. And apparently you can't do that under USADA's rules. You can't say, if you give us evidence against one particular rider, then we can offer you a deal. I think the evidence that you've got to provide for amnesty, for want of a better word, has to be more generic and has to be either about yourself or doping culture in general. I don't think it's allowed to be about one specific rider, which is, I think, why they're getting their underwear in a twist over this.
See, but I think they're getting it exactly wrong there, because I genuinely don't want to see Armstrong brought down if he's innocent. For him to be brought down with, you know, folk perjuring themselves would be a complete disgrace. I mean, I get quite cross even thinking about that. But what they're trying to bring down here is an entire culture, an entire alleged culture of doping within US Boastal and the subsequent iterations of that team. It's not just about one rider. What they're trying to investigate is, yes, Armstrong, but also the backroom boys, you know, right down to the bus driver who allegedly parked in the lay-by, the people who transported the blood bags. It's not, as it's perceived by many people who actually do bite the Lance fanboy tail, it's not a persecution of Lance. I'm sure for some people it is, but from our point of view it isn't. What it is an attack on a whole soft white underbelly of dirty doping. Sorry, alliteration again. A soft white underbelly of, you know, supported doping. A culture which encourages young riders coming into the sport to dope to improve. That's what's being attacked, and that's what they're looking for testimony about. And I think that's perfectly valid.
Yeah, this all comes from Tim Herman, who's one of Lance's legal team, and he said, USADA is promising riders a sweetheart deal if they can produce anything harmful on Armstrong. A rider who has doped, they tell them, if you can finger Armstrong, see, it wasn't just me, we'll get out the eraser and everything is cool. Now, the thing is, he says that he's got a list of riders that have been offered a deal, but he can't disclose, or he would not disclose, which rider or riders have been offered this. My question is, why can't he disclose it? I mean, if he claims that USADA are playing silly buggers here, why not say, look, they've contacted X, Y, and Z, and this is not right and it's not fair?
I mean, there's a couple of interesting things as well going on here, because you're right, he should be naming people. Chris Manderson, who's Tyler's attorney, And I'm actually a Taylor fanboy a wee bit because, you know, we spoke to him on the show and I thought he was a lovely bloke. He said that he's been speaking with Nowitzki and Miller and he expects that Tyler will be cooperating. Now, that doesn't mean he's gonna finger anybody. He could just be saying, actually, no, it's all rubbish because we don't know what's going on behind closed doors.
But, yeah, because it's still cooperating. Yeah.
Aye, it's still cooperating whether you're saying, no, I didn't do it or no.
Yeah.
But I don't think they can moan about it. I think it's specious. The other thing that's really annoyed me about this week is the cancer cards being played. Have you seen that?
Yes, I think I know where you're going, but continue.
In essence, you know, there's a long spiel about it, but it boils down to, you know, the people who are suffering from cancer and who believe in Live Strong, they won't get better if Lance is being harassed, which is a disgrace.
It is absolutely a disgrace, and least said about that, the better. Now, the New York Daily News reports that former Rock Racing team owner Michael Ball was the target of investigators before Floyd Landis' email to USA Cycling CEO Steve Johnson became public. Due to the history of some of his team's riders. Of particular interest to authorities have been Rashaan Bhatti and Tyler Hamilton.
Well, I mean, Ball's team was essentially a retirement home for convicted dopers, wasn't it? So it's hardly a surprise. And also, you look at their bikes and their jerseys, you could say that it's kind of rock chic. Essentially, it just made them look like, you know, literally convicts of the road. So it's no surprise that Rock Racing would be an investigated. I've always thought they were a bit dodgy.
Well, I think the interesting part of this was that Landis's email hasn't been the incendiary device that perhaps we first thought it was. The investigations were, even at some kind of embryonic stage, underway into Michael Ball and Rock Racing that may have led to other things.
I think the leak wasn't. I think Landis has been talking to people for a long time.
Well, again, as I was talking there, and actually as I was reading this story earlier today, I was kind of reminded of that mysterious tweet that Floyd sent. Must have been back in January, if not before, where I think it's probably one of the last things he tweeted before kind of closing his account, to say, was out in a bike ride and considering doing something that will change everything forever. I'm paraphrasing here. And I think we talked about it on the show at the time, saying, what on earth could he be talking about?
No, I think that was it.
And you just wonder whether he was aware of the investigations into Rock Racing even at that point, and this is why he was considering doing what he's now done.
Yeah. Let's watch it play out. I mean, it's a sign that it isn't all Landis being the bad guy for leaking. You know, Nowitzki and the like have had their eye on the sport for a long time. And as I say, either way, whether it's everybody's innocent or everybody's guilty, I think this investigation can only be good for the future of our sport after a tour that has left me hopeful that we've got a cleaner future.
Right, let's actually talk about some racing.
Is there any?
Well, there's one. Well,
don't they just go home after the tour?
Well, yeah, they should, really, shouldn't they? Castapana rider Luis Leon Sanchez took probably the biggest one-day victory of his career with an impressive win in the Clásica San Sebastián, the first big race after this year's tour.
This is a brilliant race, this. I always enjoy this race. They modified the course this year to make it hillier, and it climbed the Jaizkibel and the Arcalay twice in the final 100 kilometres. And it's often somebody like a Luis Leon Sanchez, or back in the day a Jalabert, for example, who would do it. Somebody who could climb but was a good all-rounder. And I only watched about the last 4 or 5K because, you know, essentially I couldn't find it anywhere in the telly, so I had to rely on streams. And Vinokourov was there, so, I mean, he's clearly still got his form after the tour. Luis Leon Sanchez was there, and that other all-round punchy rider, Carlos Sastre, was also there. And, you know, what chance he thought he had in a sprint against those other two, God knows, but bless him for working as hard as he did. I mean, he's got heart, has Sastre.
Yeah, he certainly does. I mean, you're right, he was never going to take either of those two in a sprint finish. I actually thought Vinokourov looked the strongest, and I thought he was going to take it, but I thought Sanchez was really clever.
Brilliantly clever.
In forcing Vinokourov to lead him out in the sprint.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Vinokourov or Vinokourov, we have to have actually some kind of consensus on how we're going to pronounce him if he's back.
Yeah, we'll send it to the Velocast pronunciation department. The BBC, I think, have got one, so we should have one too.
absolutely. But I thought he was going to win as well. But Sanchez was a deserved winner. And in Spain, you know, this is, yeah, he's going to dine out in this for the rest of his life. It's a big win for a Spaniard. So, good race, lovely weather. Hats off to Carlos Sastre, worked his wee heart out. And whether we like it or not, Vino's shown his back in no uncertain manner this year.
Just a quick word then on Castapagna. Obviously, they're set to end their sponsorship this year, and it's still looking like in a kind of what's now going to be called the Aris-esque scenario. No new sponsors on the horizon at the moment. Sanchez himself has been linked to Rabobank, but I'm just wondering what you think the future is for Castapagna.
I think they're screwed, which clearly means there'll be a new sponsor
in the next
tomorrow.
Week. Yeah, of course it does. Yeah.
I think their only hope, and I thought it was a genuine hope, would be if, you know, if the Alonso Contador thing hooked up and essentially took over the team structure of Castapagna. But now, I think they're done.
Now on to the recent World Naked Bike Ride event, which saw several naked cyclists stopped by police and told to cover up, saying that they were in violation of indecent exposure laws. The riders were ordered to get dressed or risk prosecution, according to the bike ride organisers.
Because it's illegal to expose your nipples in public unless you're breastfeeding.
According to the police, yes.
But it's all right to paint your tadger like a barber's pole and have it hanging down between your legs.
I feel that I feel for people listening again in more exotic foreign climes that I should translate that, but I don't think I've got the nerve to.
And I mean, the boy in second place in the photo, I mean, I saw this in Urban Velo. The boy in second place has got a bad case of the Andy Schleck's going on.
Well, it's very cold and you've got a presumably hard saddle riding. No, I'm not going to go anywhere for this.
This is ridiculous. I mean, seriously, what Stumpy Rider so eloquently calls his wedding veg, you're allowed to display that to all and sundry in all its wrinkled, disgusting nastiness, right? But you can't have a nice pair of boobs out. What kind of world do we live in?
The other bit that kind of caught me was the cyclists themselves say they were merely exercising their First Amendment rights. How does this relate to the First Amendment? I mean, I'm obviously, as you can tell by my accent, not a citizen of the United States, but even I know, or
well,
I'm struggling to see how...
One, it could be the right to bear arms, I'm telling you. He's a gifted lad.
Shall we move on?
I think we probably should.
Now, launched just last week was the Going Bike website, which has been set up to be an eBay-style auction website, but just for bikes and bike accessories.
Yeah, I mean, it's in London, and they're talking about 1.5 million unused bikes in London, which is something that, I mean, really shocked you the first year we went to Eurobike, because you were going, look at all these bikes, you know, there must be so many cyclists that we can market a podcast to. And I said, in essence, most of these will get bought and left in a garage. And they're talking about 200,000 just in London, abandoned to the wilds and the gardens. So what they're trying to do is reroute some of these bikes from, you know, the dusty back corner of a garage into the hands of somebody who'll actually ride it, as well as getting the person whose dusty garage it's in a bit of cash for it. So essentially, they're trying to recycle and create an economy around the bikes that are bought with the best intentions, mostly, and get them under the bums of people who are going to ride them. So I'm not sure if it's going to be a success, because it's going to have to gain some critical mass, no pun intended, to have the eBay effect where there's enough people in that community to actually make the thing work and keep it rolling. But I think they deserve a mention and they deserve some kudos just for, you know, for having the courage to try.
Well, that's exactly it. I mean, like yourself, I really hope this works. It's a fantastic idea, but as we say, you've mentioned the word, I mentioned it in the intro, it's eBay. And why would anyone use this rather than eBay? I can't quite see what the USP is to say, well, it only deals with bikes and bike accessories.
Incidentally, not plugging anything, but I had a good clear out of my hut and there'll be some excellent stuff on eBay in the next week or so.
That was a plug, and don't you try and hide it.
I'm eyeing a lovely wee 18-watt guitar amp, which needs some money. So. I think the set of Mavic Heliums I've forgotten I even own.
The stuff in the back, I mean, it's not a huge shed.
I suspect Bernardino's living in the back corner of the shed.
Lord Lucan and Shergar as well. Now, you can find out more about that on goinggoingbike.com. Now, another in the long series of why didn't I think of that companies. This time I'm seething about Bike About Tours, who specialise in taking English-speaking tourists around Paris by bike.
Well, I tell you, when we first went to Eurobike, which is upcoming, and thanks to everybody for their donations, we talked about, when we were staying in Bruges on the way back that particular time, that we should maybe try and get a bicycle tour of Bruges. So, there's quite a few folk that, that do that kind of thing. This was brought to my attention by a guy called John Hunt, who I presume isn't the one who led the successful 1953 Everest expedition. And he'd been essentially to watch the tour, and he kept casting up during his email about how much he'd enjoyed it, so I'm quite cross at him for that. But he said, essentially as a soap to his wife, he visited Paris, and she found online about Bike About Tours, and they had a half-day tour which cost €30, which is, it's the price of a sandwich and a Ricard in Paris. I mean, it's dirt cheap in Paris. And they had a fantastic half-day. And their guide saved them a fortune because he was keen to recommend places that were either free or good value to watch. So they learned a lot about Paris, had a great time riding about on bikes in quiet streets, and got value other than the bike tour just because of the local knowledge. They do really nice looking family tours where essentially they give you a guide just for your family and show you the back streets and the wee bakeries and that kind of thing. They do general tours for the public. It just looks fantastic, and I want to go and work for them. I mean, it's Paris, bike, what's not to love?
Absolutely. I mean, they also do bike rentals as well, and they've got tours running every day, except for a period in January where I presume that's,
bloody freezing.
It's too cold, exactly. And they run tours twice in the high season. I mean, you're saying it, but, it's perfect, just a private tour for just your family, but they say that they never ever take out any group more than 12 people, so it's hardly as if it's, some huge, massive peloton of riders going round. And as you also said, it's €30 for adults. And you can find out more at bikeabouttours.com. Now, following in the footsteps of other major cities such as Paris, Amsterdam and Barcelona, London have finally launched their very own cycle hire scheme.
The Barclays Cycle Hire. It's got a good sponsor. It's got a plethora of apps. There's even an Android app that I can have on my phone which shows me, just like a car park notice actually, the distance and direction. You hold your phone flat, it shows you the distance and direction to your nearest pickup or drop-off point and the number of bikes that are available.
Well, that'll be useful in Peebles as you're 600 miles away. But
it actually did do that. It's ridiculous. Well, it's not ridiculous. It's doing what it's programmed to do. Journeys under 30 minutes are free once you're registered. It's Vélib, in essence. It's what we've talked about in a multitude of cities over the year and a half we've been doing the Velocast. But it's in London, and it's got a good cartoon of Boris on a bike. There's been some complaints about it already, so why I don't want to go into too much depth and, say it's such a fantastic idea is I want to see how it plays out, because we've seen schemes like this elsewhere where it's just no work because it's not got the backup or bikes haven't been maintained or that sort of thing. But I mean, I think we thought it deserved a mention because it's a major city and they're making an effort.
Yeah, well, it seems to have got off to a fairly good start. The Transport for London are saying that there were more than 14,000 journeys being taken by bike in the first 2 days of the initiative, which was 30th of July and 1st of August. And 21,000 people have signed up to join the scheme, making an increase of 9,000 from the number who had registered their interest on the first day. But you're talking about a city of, I don't know, was it 5-6 million people? So patently a
Did
long
you see,
way to go.
I don't habitually watch The One Show. In fact, I think I've only seen it about half a dozen times, and it's mostly because that Christine Blakely girl's quite easy in the eye, although she's left now. But Boris was on it this last week, and I turned on because I knew he was on it. And he's as mad as a bag full of mad things. He really is. They had him riding around what they called the velodrome, but was in fact a strip of white paint where the velodrome will be in the London Olympic site. And then he did this weird thing where he rode off on one of these bikes, and I don't think it was a very good advert, because the wheel, they did a kind of fake wheel fall off, where, you know, he rode off, there was a loud clanging noise, and a wheel flew back onto the set. But he's a cyclist, you know, he's a proper cyclist.
No, he is. I mean, and we have spoken a lot about Boris cycling, and give him his due, he does ride his bike, and it's not a publicity stunt, and it's not there just for show. As you say, he clearly is a cyclist.
Having said that, he let something slip during the probing of the One Show interviewers. Because in essence, they said, you know, what do you think of the coalition? And he said, well, I kind of look upon it as a hybrid. You know, you've got the powerful, meaty petrol engine of the Conservatives, and then the kind of power with nothing of substance that comes from the electric motor that is the Liberal Democrats. I love him. He's fantastic.
I mean, there has been some criticism of the bikes themselves. Apparently the brakes are rubbish to the point of being dangerous. And they use bungee straps as opposed to a basket or pannier.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I was talking about with criticism. So I think we should watch how this plays out, and people can make their own judgments in, you know, in a couple of months, and whether we see them, you know, in canals in London or appearing in Germany or whatever. I think they still deserve some plaudits for actually getting the thing up in the first place, though.
Definitely. Now, a video that you spotted on the Cyclicious website that features Hans Ray, Steve Peat and Danny McCaskill riding together in the Scottish Highlands.
One, just, I mean, I'm not going to wax lyrical about the, you know, about the video. It's awesome bike handling in Scotland, which is the best place in the world, okay? So, you need to watch the video. What really got me here was a sense, and it's really sad, because I can remember reading Richard's bicycle book and, you know, the early freewheel catalogues where they had those big, big, heavy ridgeback mountain bikes and feeling part of the cutting edge of mountain biking and how it was a dangerous and new sport. And now we've got three generations of mountain bikers, all of whom were within my lifetime, appearing in the same video. And I just thought, geez, I'm old. You know, you've got Hans No Way Ray, who we saw at Eurobike last year. That awesome bike handling from day one. You know, he used to ride for, I think, Tioga, or sponsored by Tioga, some of the most gobsmackingly brave bike riding I've ever seen. Steve Peat, who we've, you know, we've waxed lyrical about for his performances. And Danny McCaskill, where we talked about his trials video in the streets of Edinburgh. And I'm just old, you know. I've lived long enough that there's three generations of mountain bikers, all of whom I've heard of. It's sad.
Well, while John goes into a corner, quietly weeps and tries to throw a rope over the rafters, let's talk about some gear. And Luke are launching a carbon fibre bodied version of its famous Keo pedal called the Blade Aero.
Horny. That's it. It's horny. Okay. It's nothing else.
Okay, well, it's their carbon blade. Sorry, it has their carbon blade retention spring with an aerodynamic bottom side that Luke claims improves the aerodynamics by a whole 2%.
Hey, this and another thing that we're just about to talk about are the most exciting things I've seen all year. What I laughingly call the peak of my career as a cyclist was during the, really, the aero revolution that started with Greg LeMond using the Scott bars and that sort of thing. And all the time we were looking for wee gains. And there used to be companies like MDT, who were small one-man outfits who'd sell things like armrests for aero bars that would get you 2 millimetres lower, weird pedals which were more aero, bladed seat posts before, you know, Giant had thought of them with their, you know, their first compact road bikes and that sort of thing. And building a time trial bike used to be a thing of joy. God, I just talked about feeling old with these riders, now I sound like my dad. And all of these wee gains would make a huge difference to your speed. You know, add them all together and you'd get, it's still the legs that do the job, but you could get extra speed almost for no effort other than getting your wallet.
Yes, sir.
And the problem now is there's millions of brilliant time trial bikes. There's a far better understanding of aero position, so the average cyclist can get help from, you know, a number of places that will make them more aero. That it was a real treat to me to see two wee things which exhibited the kind of aero geekery I loved back in the day. And these aerodynamic Keos, they're just things of beauty. I mean, you can just feel the air slipping off the back of them without much drag. I'm in love.
Well, no details on price yet, and that's no surprise, as these were featured on Alberto Contador's bike during the prologue and final time trial of this year's Tour de France. Now, recently doing the rounds on tech websites are the carbon fibre cages, which have been developed by Wolfgang Berner for the SRAM Red derailleurs.
See, same thing. Aero geekiness. What you've got is airflow, and those pesky derailleur jockey wheels, they're spinning round, and that chain's going really fast over them, and that's all turbulence and drag, and this just fares it in so you can go much faster. Well, maybe a wee bit faster. But it's horny and it's geeky, and I just like it for the same reason I like the Kios, you know. A big bit of my love of time trial bikes is the fun that I used to have playing with making small aero improvements. And these two things just, they speak to that part that still lives, you know, somewhere in the back of my head. So,
well, what was...
Chapel.
Yeah, what I was going to ask, though, is do you think that these carbon fibre cages are going to be something that we'll see as standard on high-end road bikes or time trial machines in the future?
God, I hope not, or it'll get really boring. I like the wee geeky bits that make a difference. You know, they personalise the bike. If you're talking from a common sense point of view, yeah, of course they are. In the same way that aero time trial rings and chain sets are now commonplace and you used to have to special order them, they'll make a small but proven difference. And even at a good clubman level, a small difference might be the difference between, you know, beating your mate by 2 seconds that week as opposed to habitually losing by 1 second and wanting to punch him every time you race him. So, yeah, I think they probably will.
Okay, okay. Now, Hutchison have been showing off their all-new wheel set built by Corima to the Bike Rumour website. Now, the wheels are billed as the first ever full carbon clincher wheel set that's road tubeless compatible.
And they're lovely. I think road tubeless is, it's an idea that's coming. I mean, somebody asked us to look at road tubeless at Eurobike when we're there. And, you know, Hutchison are pushing it because they're the leading force behind tyre production. But these are, you know, just over 1,500 grams for the pair. Decently aero. You know, they tick all the boxes for a standard good carbon clincher. And they're tubeless compatible, and there's a lot of benefits to that in terms of puncture resistance, the way the tyre sits in the rim, ride quality, that sort of thing. So it's an idea whose time is coming, and you could see a fair few of these under Hutchison-sponsored teams in the big races next year.
Mm. Now, Velocity has partnered with Halo Coatings to add an innovative new product to their line called Halo Reflective Rims. Using a durable powder coating process, the rims reflect bright white when struck with direct light. Try saying that fast 3 times.
No, because I haven't had enough beer to loosen my tongue properly. We've talked about being seen many, many times. I mean, we've talked about having a flashing light and a constant light, and we've talked about, you know, decent front lights. We've talked about the monkey light where you can write names with your wheel. Remember
that? Oh, yeah,
yeah.
Where
you could program in the message or the face. And we saw it at Eurobike last year. What I like about these is it's a really practical safety feature because, you know, your bike wheels are two huge discs, so they're going to catch a lot of light. But you don't look like a knob when it's not dark. Just looks like an ordinary set of rims. And I really like that because it means if you've got... When I used to commute, for example, to and from the co-op, I had a really nice Dave Yates. It was my racing bike as well. And I felt really bad putting reflective tape on the, you know, the chain stays and that sort of thing because I had this foolish idea being cool was better than, you know, not being blobbed by a truck. I mean, with this, you could build a nice-looking posh bike that would just look like a normal bike, but would light up like a Christmas tree under direct light in the dark. So I like them a lot.
Yeah, well, they're offered on a range of the company's wheels, but I couldn't find any details on price on the website and, of course, how much of a premium this adds to the cost. But you can have a look for yourself at velocityusa.com. Now,
good rims as well, actually, just before we move on. I mean, I've built loads of sets of wheels with Velocity rims. And a lot of people worry because, you know, they usually don't have spoke eyelets, you know, it's just a bare drilled hole. But they seem to build a really nice, strong wheel. The rims seem pretty true, you know, even before you start building them. So it's not just a cool coating, they're actually decent rims as well.
On now then to SR Sun Tour, who have launched their new e-bike platform at the Munich Bike Expo, which took place last week.
Always makes me a wee bit sad seeing Sun Tour when I think about, you know, Super Pro and the first compact gear sets with MicroDrive and that sort of thing, and now it's pretty much just a name. I'm all reflective and old
tonight.
They'll just find me hanging for the tree in the back garden tomorrow.
Could someone bring John a couple of grams of lithium, please, to pep him up a bit?
This is just e-bikes gaining traction. I mean, it doesn't look particularly exciting when you compare it to the offerings that we've seen from and talked about from Shimano and SRAM. But it shows that right through the marketplace now, people are taking e-bikes seriously. And I think that's a great thing. I mean, I posted a tweet today. I don't know if you were out and about in Peebles or whether you were, you know, down at your job or whatever, away from Peebles. But I thought I'd woken up in Copenhagen one day this week because I was driving my postie van down the high street and there were two rickshaws with tweedgreen.co.uk, which is quite clever. You see what they've done there? Because our big park in Peebles, or the park beside the river, is called Tweedgreen. And I thought, oh, rickshaws. It must be something for Tweedlove, which is the biking festival that's going on just now in the, you know, in the Border Valleys. And then I saw probably 5 e-bikes within about 10 minutes. And I thought, in a town like Peebles, which is small, but let's be blunt, there are bits that are really hilly. You know, if you're going up Ederson Road or, you know, up School Bray or something, it's a sair fecht. And it suddenly struck me, we're the perfect town for e-bikes. And these people were pedalling quite happily along the high street or, you know, along Rosetta Road or whatever. But when they came to the old town, that sort of thing, wee bit of pedal assist, they weren't sweating by the top, but they were still using the bike for transport. So it's a trend I'm happy to see gaining traction right through the kind of price range. And the important thing here is that we've talked about Gary Fisher's e-bikes, for example, being really expensive, which they're not. I mean, they're good value for what they are. But when you see SR Sun Tour coming in and looking for OEM partners, it means that the e-bike thing's not going to be confined to the high end. For people who only want one that will go for, you know, 5 or 6 miles around Peebles, there's going to be a sensible offering. So it's something we've talked about for 18 months, and I think we might actually have been right with this one. It's something that's going to catch on.
Well, that's the end of e-bikes as we know it then. That's our kiss of death applied to that. Now, Xtracycle has just released their popular P-Pod child seats customised to the Kona Oot, which, as long-term listeners to this show will know, is one of our favourite bikes ever.
Yeah, it is. But it's a rip-off of an Xtracycle. So I think it's really brave of Xtracycle to be providing some of essentially what are their unique selling points to Kona. But what it's going to do is it's going to show people what this kind of bike can do. And if they ride an Oot, maybe they'll move up to an Xtracycle. And if not, then at least Xtracycle are selling really cool things like the P-Pod, you know, with the child seats. How cool would it be to have two kids riding along behind you in the street? And
no,
that?
Absolutely.
So it's a brave move. You have to replace your existing Kona deck with the Xtracycle Oot deck, which is, you know, the modification that they've made to their own stuff to fit the Oot. Yep. But then you can ride the Xtracycle compatible accessories. And I think it's either they're going to get the accessory sales or they're just going to show people what you can do with these bikes and hopefully move them up to more expensive versions. But we love the Oot. I mean, we genuinely love it.
Oh, absolutely. The aforementioned Oot deck is $39, and then you've got two options. You can either have the P-Pod LT, which is the double, you know, two seats for $320 additional, or just a single at $160. And you can find out more about this at extracycle.com. Now, I think it's probably time for some picks of the week. Is it?
Oh, actually, yeah. I mean, it's suddenly struck. It's ages since we've done picks of the week. I could have had 5 or 6 this week because we've had the, you know, the tour shows.
Yes, quite.
So I'm actually quite excited to hear what you've got because I've no doubt you're the same as me.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm going to go for it's a custom randonneur made by, and I think it's pronounced Gilly Custom Bikes, made for a man called Arno. is all I know. But anyway, this was built from Columbus's new XCR stainless steel tubing. It's got S&S frame connectors, which we've talked about before, and I know that you're a big fan of, going back to
Co-Motion. Yeah, absolutely.
And this was so that the customer could obviously pack it away into a regulation size bag or box. You've got stainless Paragon dismount rear dropouts modified to suit the roll-off hub, which is a 14-gear hub. It's got Mittelmeyer shifter for shifting on the tops.
Wear gloves unless that's changed, by the way. That could shred your hands, that shifter.
Well,
but it's a really good shifter.
Apparently it works really well, according to the piece on the website. Really, really nice Gilberto handlebar tape and saddle. And I just loved it. I thought it was a cracking bike. And this comes from a guy called Ewan, and I think it's Gelly, who's based in Australia and makes handmade steel bikes that, as he says, are crafted one at a time. Prices start at $1,900, and I assume that's Australian dollars for just a frame, and then you can take it from there based on your specification that you're after. Just, I mean, lovely bikes, and all I would say is go check them out at gillycustombikeframes.com.au.
Well, that was actually brought to our attention by an Australian listener, and I think we actually had a cage fight to decide who got to pick
it. Yes, we did a bit, yeah.
because it's fucking gorgeous. I mean, I'd built, as I say, the first roll-off bike that Co-Motion had ever built was for one of my customers. And if I'd seen this, Co-Motion are doing a far better job now. I mean, they built it the way that John and I decided we wanted it built, and it's a beautiful bike. But we both decided we wanted just a standard bottom bracket, and that made it really complicated for Duane and Co. Yeah. But this is just... just chapeau. That's a thing of beauty. I mean, it's a gorgeous looking bike.
It's one of those
clearly
things,
a guy who understands steel.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, if that was your bike, you wouldn't want another bike for the rest of your life. It would just bring a smile to your face every time you looked at it.
And I tell you, I've only done it with a few bikes, but if that was my bike, it would be sitting in my living room, and every so often I'd be glancing across at it and go, just like you've got, you know, the most beautiful girlfriend in the world. You go, how did I end up with that? I don't deserve that. That's beautiful. But mate, that says more about my kind of lack of self-esteem than anything else, I think.
Actually, strangely, no, I thought you were going to say, you know, you occasionally glance over at guitars, which I know both of us do.
Oh no, I do that too. That's the same thing.
Anyway, your pick of the week.
My pick of the week is actually something we've talked about before, and it's the Clean Bottle, which Dave at Clean Bottle, who clearly has no shame because he spent the entire year dressed as a bottle running up and down mountains all over the world, and in fact he must have some really good inside dirt on Phil Liggett, because Phil Liggett talks about them every time he appears on the telly.
I mean, it was tantamount to an exactly, it was tantamount to, you know, a 5-minute advert Phil was giving out every day when he spotted the Clean Bottle guy, as you say, running up and down a mountain. So I hope it's done well for him.
I tell you, seriously though, Dave was kind enough to send us a few of these bottles, and I mean, the esteem I've held them in is the fact that I've had them for probably 5 weeks and you haven't.
I was going to say that I don't have mine, so I can't comment on how great these bottles are because you've not blooming given me mine yet.
Anyway, it's a fairly standard bottle, except imagine a double-ended bottle where both ends unscrew. And at the bottom end, instead of the, you know, the bite valve or the drink valve, it's just flat. And so to clean it, all you do is screw both ends off and you've got a completely open cylinder that's really easy to clean. It's clear so you can see you've got all the gunk out. It's made of a plastic which, you know, won't leach into your skin and give you, or into your bloodstream and give you, you know, disgusting diseases. The thing that I didn't get to see in the picture, because I thought that's a great idea, it's probably made to a price. And it isn't. It's fantastic quality as well. The fact that the screw on at the bottom, I'm one of those weird people who doesn't like using a camelback in a mountain bike. I still use bottle cages. And if you have the cage adjusted so it's tight enough to hold the bottle properly, with a modern soft plastic bottle, often when you try and push the bottle in, the bottle collapses as it goes in. With this screw on bit at the bottom, it's stiff enough that, you know, it goes in any cage, however much you've bent it to hold the bottom securely, the bottle securely. It's a good heavy grade of plastic. It's going to last you for ages. The valve seems pretty leak-proof. There's absolutely nothing wrong with this. It's a perfect design for a bottle. I'm going to use nothing else from now on. Camelback podium bottles, a work of genius. That bottle we saw at Eurobike last year, which also had the gel holder, a work of genius. But this is just a traditional bottle, made easier to clean and executed perfectly. Have a look at the website. I don't care if I got them free. I'm buying these as my only bottle now. Brilliant, brilliant.
And based on that glowing review, we can only assume that the chap
never
getting mine for one, and also the chap that runs the Clean Bottles company also has the negatives in the brown envelope of you too.
No, it's a fantastic. It's a simple thing, and it's a beetle done perfectly.
Okay, just before we go, we obviously need to talk about the Gazzetta dello Velocast mini league that was running through the Tour de France.
Yeah, and obviously, and you know, as I've said on many occasions, people should go and visit the site of the initiator of this, who was Simon Lam at Gazzetta della Bici. But it's been great fun, and our kind of self-imposed exile since the Tour, because frankly we burnt ourselves out of 10 days, has meant we've been a bit lax in telling people about the results. And we decided to have Simon on the show, but unfortunately events have conspired to prevent that just now. So what we'll do is just give a brief first and last prize, and we'll, you know, put a full list of prize winners up on the site, and Simon,
as I'm sure,
can do
Simon
the same.
Will as yeah. well, yeah. And we have to say that, as John says, first and last prize, there had to be a prize for Lanterne Rouge. Somebody had to win a prize for being the last person in the whole of the league.
And what they've won, because they're last, so they're clearly crap, is 3 months coaching from Total Coaching, which is an incredibly generous prize. It's, you know, proper coaching from a level 3 certified coach, covering every aspect that you need to improve your riding, whether you're a sportive rider, somebody who's racing, a keen amateur, or even somebody just getting used to the bike. So Lanterne Rouge here has got a prize that I'm jealous of. I mean, this has got a value of about £300.
I was going to say, hang on a minute, if I'd have known that, I would have chosen, I don't know, Lance Armstrong 9 times.
Aye, thanks for that, yeah, very good. You know, this is, it's geographically agnostic as well, you know, with the internet, whether you're in the States or you're not, and actually I don't think he is, I think he's a Brit, it's a great prize to have. So if you were Lanterne Rouge, and you know who you are, get in touch with us via the contact form. I'll pass your details on, and you're cycling. Seriously, I've gone on till I'm blue in the face about how much more important than Blinger Coach is. This'll do a world of difference to your cycling. So, well done.
Yes, but of course, in first place,
Was Fabs. We've talked about Fabio Close quite a lot in the past. In fact, I mentioned that he needed sponsorship, and the great job that he's, you know, his stepdad Nick and his mum Gabby do, supporting him in his sport. And he's at an age where essentially he's a sponge. You know, he's just, clearly he's a sponge for information, because he's a great DS and he's a bloody good rider. Or great virtual DS, which is clearly skewed, because I'm actually not very good at it, which means it must bear no, you know, relation to reality. But
you keep telling yourself that.
I know. Sean Lally at Cycle Systems, and you know, the rest of the team at Cycle Systems, generously donated a full, properly certified mechanics course. And we had to check with them before we could okay the first prize for Fabus, that, you know, there was no age limit due to things like disclosure or, you know, public liability insurance and that sort of thing. So at his age, which is, what, is he 13 or 14 just now? You're going to get, or he's going to get, a full mechanics training course in professional bike shop mechanics. He's going to get a proper certification at the end that he can walk into any bike shop with, and he's going to be able to fix his dad's bikes, which is probably more important. But it's going to give him just another string in that bow that I think we're genuinely, I mean, looking at his attitude, looking at the way he treats people on Twitter, we're genuinely looking at a guy who could go places in the cycling trade and in the cycling world. It's just another string to his bow, and frankly, I'm delighted he won. Because I was worried that this prize was so good that somebody, you know, it would, somebody in America could win it and it would be no use to them. Or, you know, a bunch of people could be in the top 10 and it would be no use to them because, you know, they were nowhere near. What we've got is that perfect storm of somebody who's young enough to have all the potential, who's talented enough in other areas of the bike to have shown a passion that will, you know, follow them through the trade, and who's near enough geographically to take advantage of Sean and Co's incredibly generous offer. So it actually brought a tear to my eye. It's made the whole bloody league worth doing, and I'm really pleased that Fab's won. Although I'd prefer that it was me.
And just to wrap up that little session, of course, we were stunned, both John and I, and indeed Simon, were stunned by the number and the range of prizes that were offered here for this. And we're going to sort out who out of the winners gets what, and we'll publish a full list on our website. As John said, Simon will probably do the same. So if you're one of those winners, just get in touch with us via the contact form on velocast.co.uk, and we'll put you in touch with the relevant people to get your prize.
Yeah, and in fact, even if you don't think you're a winner, we've got enough prizes that we're going to have a goodly number of spot prizes throughout the league. So even if you finished, you know, as poorly as I did, I mean, my wife nearly caught up with me by the end, and she picked her team with a pin. Have a look, because you might still win a prize.
Okay, well, I think that's probably all we have time for this week. Thank you so much for listening, and of course staying subscribed. You can contact us at our website velocast.co.uk, or on Twitter, where we are at Velocast. Well, we hope you all have a great week, and hope to speak to you again soon for another edition of the Velocast.